Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Fight Fever. I'm Dave Hendrick, joined by David Davis. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm good, cheers, mate. Thanks for asking.
So, we obviously have arguably the most exciting weekend in boxing in a long time, fast approaching. But before we get to that, I feel it's important that we start with last weekend, where there was one of the worst stoppages you're going to see this year. Ismael Barroso taking on Rolly Romero for the vacant WBA super lightweight title. Barroso ahead on all three judges' scorecards. Ninth round, the fight gets stopped, and Romero is declared the winner. Dave, this was an atrocious stoppage. This was a fight in which Barroso needed to be allowed the opportunity to go out on his shield. 40 years of age, still chasing his dream of becoming a world champion. This was his second world title fight. The previous one was to Anthony Crolla back in 2016. He was stopped on the night. This was his chance to finally crown his career with the world title. He'd won four in a row. He'd worked really hard to put himself back in the top bracket. And I feel like he's been robbed. And I think if there's any justice, the WBA need to immediately declare a rematch.
They should. They really should, because it was a disgrace to the decision. But the smart money, probably the boxing money, tells you that they won't. Because you look at that decision, and even the referee, Dave, I mean, Tony Weeks, that is an ultimate experienced referee. He's done so many world title fights, you've lost track. So it's not like it's a something you say, dodgy referee, all those types of things. Utterly, utterly bizarre. Really is. And I just, there's a bit of me just wonders, did he think about he's 40, you know, the age element, but at best, and I mean this at best, he was maybe a little gassy. He was tiring, but funnily enough, you know, 40-year-olds and title fights down the stretch, there can be a little bit of that. But there's a difference between starting to gas and being hurt and having to be stopped. They're completely different things. Also, like you said, it's a world title fight, for God's sake. You have to give the man every chance. It's only when you really think the fighter's safety is, you know, in severe danger, that's when you have to step in. That's the only time. I mean, he's well ahead on all the scorecards. And the smart money probably tells you that they want to move Romero on, you know, match him again, build him again, as it were, against certain opponents. So the realism is it should happen. There should be a rematch. It should be called for immediately. It should be granted. You never know, but I wouldn't bet a single penny that it happens. It's a disgrace.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like you said, like, this is a vastly experienced referee, one of the few who you trust to make the right call. But he got it so, so wrong here. Like, normally, you're looking at the judges and thinking, are those judges going to screw Barroso here? Like, we know he's winning this fight, but are they going to screw him here? Because very clearly, Rolly Romero is, you know, a fighter with a very bright future, a guy that seems on course for big things. Obviously got his ass kicked by Tank Davis, but everybody gets their ass kicked by Tank Davis.
Yeah.
This was his comeback fight, and with two defeats, he would be damaged goods. With a defeat to Davis, that's just par for the course if you're going to fight in his weight class. But this is really poor. And I haven't seen Romero come out and make any comments on the stoppage or anything yet. So, you know, we'll wait and see if anything does, if he does have the decency to at least come out and say, yeah, no, that was a bit of a questionable one. I'd like to run that back. Even if he doesn't do it, at least if he said it, it would mean quite a bit. I don't know where Barroso goes from this, but it won't be to a title fight. And that's such a shame because he really did earn it. Also to stick on things that have happened. Last weekend we had UFC on ABC. Rosenstroke versus Almeida and Yailton Almeida with the submission win over Jairzinho Rosenstroke. Johnny Walker beating Anthony Smith on a unanimous decision. Ireland's own Ian Garry beating Daniel Rodriguez in fairly spectacular fashion. And Matt Brown still knocking about, beating Court McGee, still knocking about, probably the highlight of the undercard. But the more interesting UFC was obviously the week beforehand, which we talked about on our previous pod of what we were expecting. As we predicted, Aljamain Sterling gets the victory over Henry Cejudo. But I have to say, I was humbled by how impressive Cejudo was in his first fight back after such a long absence. I didn't think it was a split decision, though. I thought that was a little bit questionable. I did think Sterling won the fight, not comfortably, but clearly enough. What was your view on that main event and also that co-main event with Bilal Muhammad beating Gilbert Burns, which is also something we expected, and that one was a fairly lopsided fight?
Yeah, it's with the Cejudo, I think he's right. Even when people lose, you've got to give them their props and their respect. He actually did, like you said, far, far better than I thought he would. And, you know, he went the distance, he went the five rounds. I can't really say it any other way. I've got to agree with you. It wasn't a split decision. I'm sorry, it wasn't a split decision at all. He did, you know, he did himself proud, and especially after such a lengthy absence from the sport. Really good, but Sterling won that. Simple as that. Sterling won that. I don't really think there's any sort of debate. And maybe the sad thing is, does Cejudo just go into the wilderness again, as it were, so to speak? But we'll have to see. But it wasn't a split decision. Let's not pretend with that at all. With Gilbert Burns, I actually love this guy as a fighter, but I don't know, his record and his amount of fights is almost now as long as his injury list, Dave, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? It's just like, I don't even know how to put this. He's game as they come, but the body is just breaking down, isn't it? And, you know, if you're going to fight against, you know, top competitors like Muhammad, I think I saw the list, as they said afterwards, there was torn AC joints, left deltoid, one of his trapezius muscles, his neck, everything. Basically, his corner just reeled off a medical dictionary type of thing, didn't they, in all honesty? So,
yeah.
It's great that he goes in there. You know, I'd describe him as an absolute warrior. You cannot take that away from him in any way. But, as they say in Rocky, he's got the snarl, but he ain't got the tooth anymore. That body is giving up big time.
Yeah, yeah, and it might well be time for someone close to him to sit him down and say, look, is this worth it anymore? Because, you know, you're spending far more time rehabbing injuries than you're spending actually training for fights. And each one of these injuries is going to have bigger effects in your later life than they're having now even. So he's got to start thinking about his quality of life, you know, as he gets a bit older as well. To look ahead then for the UFC, obviously there's a whole bunch of, you know, fight nights and on ABC and all that kind of stuff coming on. But what people want to talk about, obviously, is the pay-per-views. And we do have some big pay-per-view stuff lined up. So June 10th, Amanda Nunes against Irene Aldana. Amanda Nunes, unquestionably the greatest female mixed martial artist of all time. Charles Oliveira against Daniil Dariush on the undercard of that one, or on the co-main event. You have to hand it to Charles Oliveira. This guy just doesn't do straightforward, easy fights. He wants the best guy every single time. And coming off the defeat to Islam, it would have been really easy for him to say, you know what, maybe I'll just take a warm-up fight. This is not that. Beneil is a monster. And that is going to be a very, very difficult fight for Charles Oliveira.
Yeah, the De Bronx is he's an absolute warrior, isn't he? You can't say anything but, and Christ, if boxers would do what Charles Oliveira would do, what a sport it would be. You know, he could really take a lesson. Again, I mean, probably at one time, I think, maybe he might even have been my favourite UFC fighter at one point. You know, he's got the jiu-jitsu, he's a black belt there. You know, he's been great in the sort of light division. He's top notch. He's game. He gives entertainment. And also, he finishes people, Dave. You know, what do you want? He is absolute box office. And I kind of love this. It's a proper almost... It's not abnormal for UFC, but it's a real throwback in the sense, like, just give him the name and he'll go in there. Doesn't really care. I don't know the guy, obviously, in his style, but he just doesn't seem to care at all who he fights, which is brilliant for us. But yeah, he ain't stepping back on the horse easily. This one's got a real chance, I think, of great that he's doing it, but I could see this coming unstuck a little bit, being honest.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I mean, Beneil is on an eight-fight win streak.
Yeah.
Dating back over 5 years. But look, I mean, De Bronx put together that win streak of his own that ran from the fight against Clay Guida all the way up to when he beat Gaethje. And if you look at the last five fights in that run, Kevin Lee, really powerful wrestler. Tony Ferguson, I know he'd lost to Gaethje, but Tony Ferguson is a monster.
Yeah.
Michael Chandler can knock anybody out at any time. Dustin Poirier and Justin Gaethje, two of the most dangerous guys in that weight class. He went through all of them. Yeah. Came up against Islam. It was a step too far. Islam has a real chance to dominate this division for as long as he wants. But you've got to give Charles Oliveira credit. It's only been 6-7 months since that fight, and he's going to get back in one of the tougher guys in the division. Following on from that, in July, we'll get UFC 290, Alexander Volkanovski against Yair Rodriguez, Brandon Moreno against Alexander Pantoja. They're the two main events. They're the two title fights. That's a stacked card. Robert Whittaker versus Dricus Duplessis. This is a beast of a card. Robbie Lawler versus Nico Price on the undercard. And then, in later July, the 29th, just announced this week, Dustin Poirier versus Justin Gaethje for the second time. That's a beast of a fight as well. Tony Ferguson against Bobby Green on the undercard. There's Paulo Costa's on the undercard. Wonderboy is on the undercard. Derek Lewis is on the undercard. That's a hell of a fight. Now, They're doing this whole, you know, the BMF title, which is really just a load of shite, like, and it seems like it's a bit of a slap in the face to Masvidal, to be honest. Like, that belt should have just gone with him. But this has the potential to be fight of the year. I mean, these two guys, they're box office every single time out, and only the very best of the best beat them. So the guys that have beaten Gaethje, Eddie Alvarez, lightweight champion, Dustin Poirier, great fighter, Khabib, greatest lightweight ever, and Charles Oliveira, lightweight champion. For Dustin, obviously, a couple of defeats early in his career where, you know, you would say he didn't look like he'd become what he's become. Danny Castillo beat him, the Korean Zombie beat him, Cub Swanson beat him, McGregor beat him, Michael Johnson beat him, but after that, he did just seem to go up and up a level. Wins over Gaethje, Alvarez, Max Holloway, lost to Khabib, beat Dan Hooker, who looked dangerous at the time. beat McGregor, destroyed him in the first one. The second one, obviously, is the leg break. Loses to Charles Oliveira, and then beat Michael Chandler last time out. I mean, again, it's other than Michael Johnson, who himself is a, you know, a strong, solid fighter, just not an elite level fighter. Other than Michael Johnson, it's only been elite fighters that have beaten him in the last decade, because the Cub Swanson fight's now over 10 years ago. And he's fought the best of the best and gone in and matched them and beat them. Same with Gaethje. I think this is going to be a hell of a scrap.
Massive. Absolutely massive. I mean, as you said, the whole Poirier Gaethje 2 BMF time, no one gives a crap about what called BMF. They just want to see this fight. Literally, I'm struggling to think of two guys that who are set to fight, who aren't, you know, like the biggest names, that aren't the actual champions, but their CVs are absolutely incredible. And they've already rewritten. I genuinely can't think of, you know, a comparable in that regard. These two, you know, you just know, it's not even a debate. It's going to be absolutely brutal. There's going to be, the ring's going to be red, isn't it? Let's be honest, by the end of it as well. No two ways about it. They are going to give value for money. The only, probably the worst thing is, I think it's right at the end of July, isn't it? It's like right 29th.
Yeah, 29th.
Something like that. So that is the only sad thing about it. But considering they ain't the, this is mad to say, considering they ain't necessarily the biggest names in the division, I know we could debate that, you know, there's not the ultimate goal. This is going to be brilliant, and I can't think of anything comparable like that, so we're going to watch it, simple as that.
Oh yeah. Their first fight was a Fight of the Year winner. That's one of two Fight of the Year winners for Gaethje, his fight against Michael Chandler in 2021. Also won that award across the board, so really, really exciting fight. But like you say, it's a shame it's so far out. Let's move things back then closer to this day and age. This weekend, let's start with the undisputed lightweight title. Devin Haney versus Vasyl Lomachenko. This one promises to be a masterclass in technical boxing, in counterpunching, in speed, in movement. I'm so excited for this fight. Haney's got a perfect record, 29-0. Lomachenko is 14-2. But one of his defeats, I think you'd throw out because he got stuck into a world title fight in only his second pro fight. He did lose to Lopez, who just had, I think, a bit too much size for him more than anything. But this is going to be unbelievably good. I'd be stunned if this isn't a great fight.
I would bet serious money this is not only a Fight of the Year contender, this is like one of those that you talk about for ages after. This is absolute elite level fighters colliding. Let's not mince it at all. This weekend, it should have every fight fan celebrating. This is just one part of it, but it's absolutely massive. It is all the gold lightweight, and just the balance of the two is brilliant. Like you said, Haney, the champion, undefeated, far younger. Even the, like you said, Lomachenko, I'm almost, it sounds weird, I almost just ignore his professional record because he had, it's not true, but approximately 8 billion fights at amateur level, I think nearly 400 or so, reality, give or take. He's an absolute technician, the Matrix, as they call it. The only downside, and this is absolutely splitting hairs, because you said it's the technical masterclass, everything, the footwork is going to be elite, not just world class, elite level we're talking. The only downside on this day, Lomachenko is maybe, I won't bet against him necessarily, just come a little bit too late in his career. 35, yeah. The peak, you know, we can't deny this, he's past his peak. He's still an absolute elite level fighter, but he is past his peak. And maybe the other thing with Lomachenko is he's probably just unlocking. He's around a little bit at the same time as the fighters that we know in the lightweight division, like Haney, Tank Davis, Garcia. There's just sometimes you're just unfortunate with when you fight them in the era, so to speak. But it shouldn't take away, and it, as well, it's right to say, I mean, look at where he started. He may just be that little bit too small to go up the level.
Yeah.
I do think, I've got to be honest, that Haney takes it. But it's such a shame because people should not be looking at Lomachenko going, oh, you know, past it and all this. This is still, let's be clear, an elite level fighter. This is still, let's be clear, elite level boxing. You have to watch this one. It's going to be absolutely immense.
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me is, you look at this lightweight division, and we've talked about it. We're in agreement. This has the potential to be an all-time era with the guys in this division. You mentioned Haney, Davis, Shakur Stevenson.
Yeah. Like,
Jesus, that guy's a machine as well. This could be an all-time era. The fact that Lomachenko's in this division, for me, is a mistake on his part, because yeah. I think he's more naturally suited to super featherweight. And Oshaik Foster, Hector Luis Garcia, Joseph Cardona, Emmanuel Navarrete, they're good fighters, but I think he goes down there and I think he could sweep the board. I think if he stepped back down to the division he spent a bit of time in already, he could sweep the board. He seemed to just be desperate to go up and up and up the divisions, but this guy started out as a featherweight, had his first six fights at featherweight, and then moved up to super featherweight, but he only spent five fights there. It ends with him destroying Riggin now, and then he moves up again. I would much rather if he'd stayed at super featherweight. I think he was best suited to that weight class. I think his movement even was a little bit better, rather than even, I know it's only 7 pounds, but you know, that 7 pounds is a lot to carry when you're that small. And like, you've got to give him credit for stepping up into this weight class, because these are monsters in this weight class. Like, Tank is a ferocious beast. Devin Haney is maybe the most talented fighter in the world. Maybe.
Yeah.
Shakur Stevenson, like I mentioned. Like, these are sensational fighters. And, you know, Josh Taylor was in this division. He's moved up now, but he could have been part of this as well. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point he decides to move back down for one of these big money fights. But I'm in agreement with you. I think Haney will take it. I just think Lomachenko as well, like you mentioned his amateur career. Like that's a lot of fights at amateur, like over 300, I think. 396 fights, one defeat. One defeat against the guy he beat twice to avenge the loss. Like, that's a lot of boxing. And then he comes in as a pro, and he's now 10 years in as a pro. And even though this is only his 20th fight, and Haney, who came in as a pro 2 years later, is actually more experienced in the pro ranks at 29-0, Haney doesn't have all those extra hours at amateur. All those extra punches, all those extra weight cuts. He doesn't have all that in his body. He hasn't taxed his body the same way. And he's 24. He's nearly 11 years younger than Lomachenko. So, yeah, I think it might just be a little bit too late for Loma, which is a shame. He's maybe the greatest amateur boxer ever with that record, two Olympic gold medals, two world titles. But this one might just be a step too far. Devin Haney is the real deal.
Yeah, and it's such a shame to say, because it almost sounds like we're sort of putting him down the way. But yeah, it's just the weight is too much. And this is where you never know, and I probably understand this. I wouldn't be surprised, Dave, if this is a lovely little pension pot either way, because he's getting an absolute ruck of cash, win or lose. And like you said, he probably could go down again, absolutely sweep it. The problem would be, even if he did sweep it, everyone would start saying, as we know in the game, well, when you're moving up, when you're fighting the big boys, that's who you want to see type of thing. It probably just is. They sometimes call it, don't they, like an in-between fighter when they're not quite in the right way as they need to be. But fair play, he's taking it on, he's having a go. And it won't be easy for Haney. I think Haney gets it, but let's not pretend this is, an easy fight by any means. This is
by far the toughest fight of Devin Haney's career. Let's be clear on that. I mean, he's beaten Linares, he's beaten Joseph Diaz, he's beaten George Cambosos, but this is a different level. But age, size, I do think Haney will have a slight speed advantage as well, even though Loma is outrageously quick with his hands. But, you know, you look at the reach, and I always look at the reach. 65.5 inches for Loma, 71 inches for Haney.
Massive, yeah.
That's a huge, huge difference. So, and he's going to be, he's just a naturally bigger guy as well. So I think it's set to be a great fight. I think it's one that, yeah, we could be talking about for a long time. I hope that following on from what we saw when we last saw Tank, we're going to start seeing more and more of these fights, especially at this division, which is just so stacked. But yeah, I think Haney for me as well is the one. On the same night in Dublin, Katie Taylor will make her return to her homeland. She's been living in Connecticut for years. She's never fought professionally in Ireland. And finally, that is going to take place. Now, to set the stage on this, originally, she was meant to fight Amanda Serrano at Croke Park.
Yeah.
Obviously, she has the win over Serrano from the Madison Square Garden fight back in April of last year. They talked about the rematch. They both wanted it. It was to be at Croke Park. First thing that happened, Croke Park fell through. Now, lots of excuses were given. And obviously, the one that kind of, I think, killed it entirely was the added cost of putting on the event. But here's the truth of why this fight is not happening at Croke Park. Because I think people outside of Ireland won't be as aware of this as those of us here. The real reason that that fight's not happening at Croke Park is because the GAA simply didn't want it to happen at Croke Park. We are in the middle of the All-Ireland Championships in Gaelic football and hurling. And Croke Park is centre stage for a lot of those games. And when Croke Park is used for a Gaelic football match, particularly when Dublin are playing, or a big doubleheader, or whatever the case might be, it is a money-making machine for the GAA. And if they were to give up a weekend, and you would have to give up an entire weekend to stage the fight, because obviously you'd have to erect everything, you'd have to put down all the flooring, build the rig up in the air, build the ring, the whole thing. You're going to not be able to play a game on the Saturday. The fight will take place Saturday night. And on Sunday, all of that will have to be taken down and taken away. And that's going to take Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So they'd be losing a full weekend. And they wouldn't be able to put a game on. And if they have a game on, it's if Dublin are playing, potentially 75 to 80,000 people. All those tickets, all the concessions, all the food, all the drink, all the rest. All of that goes in their pocket. If Katie Taylor's fighting, they just get a flat fee. They don't make a fraction of what they would make if there's games on in Croke Park. That's why they didn't want to give the stadium up. It had nothing to do with the guards. It had nothing to do with anything else. That was an easy thing to make happen. Especially when Conor McGregor turned around and said, I'll fund it. I don't care. And yet they still found new excuses for why it couldn't really happen. So instead, the fight is going to take place at the Three Arena, which is a really nice arena, it must be said, and has a capacity of about 13,000 for a fight, probably about 12 when everything gets put in place and moved around. So it'll still be a decent crowd, but not the crowd that Katie deserves, because we don't produce many great sports people. We're a small country, but when we do produce a great one, they tend to be a really great one. So we've like some of the footballers we've had, Roy Keane, Paul McGrath, you know, some of the all-time great Premier League players, John Giles in the past, Ronnie Whelan, et cetera, et cetera. We produce some great rugby players, obviously Brian O'Driscoll, Paul O'Connell, Ronan O'Gara, Johnny Sexton, et cetera, et cetera. And we do every so often just, and obviously golfers, and we're maybe for the size of the country, maybe the greatest country when it comes to horse racing. But people don't really get all that excited about, you know, you're not an Istabrak kind of guy. You know, you don't dedicate a Twitter account, say, to a horse or whatever. But when it comes to fighters, we produce few, but they tend to be special. So in the world of mixed martial arts, Conor McGregor might not be the best fighter ever. He's certainly the most important fighter ever, and certainly the biggest fighter ever. In women's boxing, the list goes Katie Taylor, and then everybody else, globally, ever. This is the greatest female boxer ever. And this entire country gets behind her when she's going to the shop for milk, let alone when she's going to step foot into a ring. Let me tell you now, if Chantel Cameron has any expectations of coming over here and being greeted even nicely, she's in for a horror show. This is going to be, there'll be no viciousness towards her, because it'll all be a celebration of Katie, but this will be the most partisan crowd she will ever experience in her life. It will be the loudest crowd she will ever experience in her life. Now, she's a great fighter in her own right. You don't become an undisputed champion without being a great fighter.
Yeah.
And she's beaten some very good fighters. But while it's Taylor going up to her, Katie Taylor is walking in as the A side of this very strongly.
It's, maybe it's by outside of this. I really don't get this. How Ireland has not just almost moved everything for Katie Taylor kind of astounds me. I mean, as you said, we're not just talking about elite. We're talking about the absolute GOAT in terms of women's boxing. Not even as a debate. The GOAT by an absolute country mile. A world superstar, you know, the best probably that's ever done it, probably the best that ever will. You know, we don't really see how anyone can trump it in the future. This sounds terrible to say, but how Katie Taylor is coming back to Ireland to fight in front of 13,000. I know that is not a small amount, don't get me wrong, by any means, but how it's only 13,000 is absolutely criminal. Katie Taylor. You know, we know what that means in boxing terms. And I'm not talking men or women boxing, just boxing terms. We know what that means, how big a star she is. All the gold, the legacy she brings. I mean, as game as you could possibly imagine, skilled as you possibly imagine, will take on anyone, like you said. We saw Serrano in Madison Square Garden. Like, she is an absolute warrior. And the thing that also astounds me, again, outside looking in, she couldn't be more proud to be Irish and celebrate her heritage, her country. For the love of God, and I won't pretend I understood all the GAA politics and everything like that. I knew it would come down to money. I'm no doubt it would come down to money. These things always do, you know, no matter what stories get trotted out. The bottom line rules everything. But how an absolute elite level fighter, I mean, a modern day sporting sensation, is coming back to the country and fighting in front of only 13,000. Even like you said, the opponent. No one even really knows the opponent, which is a disgrace in another way. Because look at Chantel Cameron's record. She is an absolutely unbelievable fighter. Let's be honest about this. It's almost criminal that she's getting no billing. And people are like, it's Katie Taylor. But it's like, this is another elite level fighter. And all that you throw into the mix, it should be massive. And again, I don't have anything worse than Ireland, but why this isn't at Croke Park, the Aviva. Something just massive outdoor somewhere. 13,000? That's terrible, Dave.
It is. It's a disgrace. No, it is a national disgrace. And the thing that gets me most is, like you said, Katie is incredibly proud to be Irish. And what people, like, often over... This isn't just... It's not just that she's an incredible boxer. She's maybe one of the most talented sports people ever. If she wasn't a professional boxer, she'd be a professional footballer. She was a professional footballer for a brief time. Like, she's incredibly gifted. She could have done anything she wanted with her life. This girl calls out the very best. The very best. Delphine Persoon, seen as unbeatable at the time, 43-1, hadn't lost in 9 years. Katie Taylor fought her, majority decision. Delphine wasn't the one that asked for the rematch. Katie said, we're doing this again. Went in and boxed the ears off her. Then she was the one that called out Amanda. Went in, split decision. Katie was the one that said, we're doing this again. When Amanda Serrano pulls out of the fight with an injury, Katie Taylor, now, let me be clear. Katie Taylor could have said, Asher, I'll just go in and shadow box for 12 rounds. And the arena would have been full. And every feint and jig and everything would have been roared with approval. She could have fought anybody. She could have taken some tomato can that she could have just boxed the ears off for 6 rounds, finished them and gone home. She didn't just look around her own division for another opponent. She looked up and went, oh, there's an undisputed world champion at the weight class above me. So maybe I'll go fight her. And called her out, not privately, publicly. Publicly said, Chantel Cameron, let's fight. Like, you don't see that with the men. There's no, like, if Devin Haney beats Lomachenko decisively this weekend, he's not turning round and saying, yeah, you know what? What I want to do is I want to step up in weight and I'm going to go and box the ears off, Regis Progress. That's not saying that. That's not happening. You know, he's not saying, I want to go up and fight Josh Taylor. That's not happening. If Josh Taylor wins his next fight, he's not coming out and calling out Errol Spence or Terence Crawford. And they're great fighters, but they're not doing that. There's only one male boxer that does that, and that's Canelo. He's the only one that calls out people from here, there, and everywhere. But Katie does it all the time. She calls for these fights because she wants to leave a legacy. And it is a national disgrace that this fight is not taking place at either the Aviva or Croke Park. It's an absolute scandal. Now, it is also a bit, it does, this is not a knock on Katie at all. This is a knock on her promoter, who I do like. You know, I do think Eddie Hearn is decent. But, like, she's fought in the Manchester Arena. She's fought at the Matchroom Fight Camp. She's fought at the SSE Arena, the AO Arena. She's fought at the M&S Bank Arena in Liverpool. She fought back in the SSE Arena in London. Like, any of those fights could have taken place in Ireland. There's no reason that it's taken this long to get Katie home. There's no reason for that. That's on him, and he needs to be held accountable for that. So when this fight is done, he needs to start making plans for September, because the GAA season is over in September. In terms of the intercounties, and Croke Park will be available. And at that point, it'll be more beneficial to the GAA to take the money for the fight than to hold out the arena. So this needs to be one of two fights that takes place here this year. And the great position for Katie is, even if she were to lose this fight, and it's a real possibility that she does, because
yeah,
Chantel Cameron is very, very good. And she's bigger, and she's younger, and they're her belts. And they were hard won. They'll be hard taken off her as well. So there's a real chance Katie does lose. But she still walks away an undisputed champion in her own weight class. The Serrano fight is still there for her. Any fight she ever has in Ireland is going to sell out, because that's just what we do here. And, you know, it's the same with McGregor. McGregor could lose his next 3 fights and then fight in Vegas after that, and thousands of Irish will fly over to that, because that's just what we do. We don't produce many, but when we do, we fucking get on board and we'll follow them till the end of the earth. Especially someone like Katie. And to be fair to him, although he's an obnoxious little prick, Conor has done a lot of good for Ireland as well. And Conor's also fiercely proud to be Irish. And he does make it clear that when he goes to fight, he does represent his country. It's just a shame he's a toe rag. But Katie, you couldn't find a sweeter person. You couldn't find a better soul. So I'm really excited for this one. Tell me more about Chantel Cameron. What are you expecting from her in this fight? Because she comes in 17-0. Her last fight, she beat Jessica McCaskill to unify the belts at light welterweight. McCaskill obviously was the woman who ended the unbelievable reign of Cecilia Bruckhaus, who was another one that Katie was potentially lining up to fight. She was 36-0 going in against McCaskill. McCaskill beats her twice, and then Chantel Cameron comes along and takes the belts off her. So what kind of threat is Chantel Cameron holding to Katie this weekend?
Massive. Don't play it down at all. Absolutely massive. In fact, you saw on the when they did the face-off earlier today, if you kind of squint a little bit, you don't have to squint a little bit, they could be sisters. They really do look, you know, so similar. Same hair colour, same profile, and basically just carrying a big freaking rook of gold. Simple as that. Like, anyone who thinks Chantel Cameron is coming in as a, you know, just a sacrificial lamb, she's here to make up the numbers, all of those types of things. And I get why people will think that, because what I've loved, and I've got to say, one massive credit to like Ireland for doing this, those open workouts for Katie Taylor have been insane. And just, the only thing I would say, Dave, is what kind of astounds me is, if I'm her trainer, I'm going mad. Because I don't know if you've seen those type of open workouts. All she does is take photos, sign autographs, you know, do all little skits and selfies, etc. She doesn't actually seem to be doing any training in an honest way, but it is Katie Taylor and she's an uber professional, so you know she will. But I love the way she's done that. I really do. The other thing to watch out with Chantel Cameron, like you said, she's a big puncher. Like, let's be clear, she's a weight class above, and that left hook she possesses is massive. Like, and I really can't sort of state this. It's almost like she could be the ultimate baddie, couldn't she, this weekend? You know, I mean, Katie Taylor's inviting 11-year-old people, you know, girls and boys into the ring. You know, everyone's applauding, everyone's cheering. It's brilliant for boxing. It's brilliant for profile. Chantel Cameron has a real chance of spoiling the party. Don't get it twisted at all. I'm saying this now. I'd still back Katie Taylor. Don't get me wrong. But if you think this is a foregone conclusion, you are living in cloud cuckoo land.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, 8 knockouts and her 17 wins. That left hook is absolute trouble for anyone that it catches. Katie is that bit older. She's 36.
Yeah.
She was late going pro, obviously, because she stuck around to box at a second Olympics when, in truth, she probably should have gone pro earlier. But she decided to box in 2016, which really wasn't the right decision. However, what I will say is she got completely ripped off as well.
Yeah.
Because she boxed the ears of Podcannon. Absolutely boxed the ears of her. And got completely screwed in that one. But she should have probably gone pro in 2012 after winning the Olympics in London. So by the time she did go pro, 2016, you know, she was already 30. Now, she's accomplished an incredible amount in the time since, and 22 fights is a hell of a record, you know, 22-0. Chantel Cameron went pro in 2017 and is 17-0. She had a decent amateur career as well. There's no question. She's an EU championship runner-up and bronze medal finisher. But never quite the elite level at the amateur level. These girls have fought before, of course, in those 2011 EU championships, and Katie won the semi-final and would go on to win gold. If history repeats itself, I'm telling you now, there will not be a roof left on that stadium because it is getting blown clean off. Katie Taylor is the best thing to come out of this country from a sporting perspective, in my opinion, ever. She's the greatest women's amateur boxer of all time. Olympic gold, 5 world championships, 6 European championships, 5 EU championships, and 1 European Games. 18 amateur gold medals. a two-weight professional world champion, an undisputed champion, and potentially a two-weight undisputed three-weight overall champion following this one. This is the best fighter in the women's game ever. Ever.
It's just crazy. I can't actually believe I'm trying not to salivate. Think about the weekend of boxing that we're talking about, and Haney Lomachenko isn't really the main event for fans. It's just absolutely insane. It really is. If you are a fight fan, you're watching these anyway. It's not even a question you need to ask real fight fans. If you're interested in fighting, you are insane if you do not watch both of these.
Yeah.
If you have a remote interest in fighting, if you listen to us even one iota, you have got to see these two fights. They are going to be massive. They are real, real. And we can say this honestly, you know, however you take what we've been saying, they are picking. They could genuinely go either way. Let's not get that twisted. That just adds to the flavour more than anything. This is absolutely brilliant. And when, oh, when are you going to see another weekend where, Christ, the amount of gold on the line, Dave, titles-wise, bragging rights, whatever you want to call it, is utterly unreal. These are just two must-watches. And the one thing I always say about Katie Taylor, if you ever wonder how big Katie Taylor is and you're ever in doubt, Conor McGregor is a Katie Taylor fanboy.
Yes.
That's all you need to know. That's all you need to know.
Yes, absolutely. Conor will be there. He'll be making noise. I should say I did misspeak. Katie's a two-weight world champion, but the other weight that she's won a title in previously was light welterweight. When she beat Christina Leonardo, in between the two fights against Delphine, she went up, won the WBO lightweight title, which is one of the many titles on the line this weekend. So, potentially, history in the making, she could become the first and only person to be an undisputed champion at two different weight classes. So, history in the making if Katie can pull this one off. Like you said, she will go in as favored. I have her to win the fight, but I think it will be tough. She's going to need to be right on her game from early on. She'll have to have her footwork and her movement right. She's going to have to land that jab and land that right hand. That right hand is key for Katie, but she's got to keep an eye on that left hook. That left hook lands, it can change the whole complexion of the fight. If Katie fights her fight and avoids that left hand, I think we see a unanimous decision. If Chantel lands that left hook and lands it early, it could be a very different fight. Let's jump quickly then to light heavyweight, where Canelo Alvarez has called out Mr. Bivol again, which I think is a really bad decision on Canelo's part. But there is obviously a ban on Russian fighters at the moment. Yeah. It should get an exemption. But am I alone in thinking Canelo's nuts?
I think the one thing I'll say about Canelo is, and maybe obviously there's all been talk about the Mexican beef he takes, etc., etc., but his cojones are probably bigger than his brain in this regard, because Bivol owned him that first fight.
Yeah.
Let's not get it twisted in any way. But fair play to Canelo. As we said, he beats Ryder comfortably, and fair play, John Ryder was so game, broken nose, fighting on wobble, like, all the credit in the world to him. His stock has gone up massively with the loss. Like, that can't be avoided. But this is what we want to see now, and we love it. The microphone, as we said, goes under his nose. Give me Bivol straight away, not hesitation. Like you said, everyone with the WBC does the old, we've got a ban on Russian fighters, you know, we need an exemption. Mauricio Suleiman, give it a rest. They'll stick $1 million under your nose and you'll sign anything they want. Let's not get it twisted in any way at all. This gets sanctioned if they can do it. It's a massive fight. And ultimately, fair play to Canelo. Can't defeat it. He's a great fighter, elite, all those things, you know, the biggest name, all that. Then again, Dave, my head tells me, if you want me to stick money on it, every penny I've got on Bivol. I'm sorry, yes. I watched the first fight. I cannot see. He's too big. He's too good. He'll never have Canelo's name, but he's got his number. Simple as that.
Yeah, and he's just, because he's so technically sound, it's just a very, very, like, there's no, with Canelo, his mastery is finding that weakness. Bivol doesn't really have a weakness other than the fact that he's not, like, kind of an outgoing personality who talks a load of shit to try and build his own fights. He just goes in, beats people up, and goes home. Simple as that. He's happy to get paid for 12 rounds. You know, he's okay with that. Big talk coming out of the heavyweight division at the moment. Eddie Hearn confirming that potentially Anthony Joshua versus Deontay Wilder, maybe in July or August. This is the fight we wanted to see, because this is the fight that's been, everybody's been dancing around it for years. This was the whole point of AJ collecting the belts, was to go and have Wilder be that final piece to the puzzle, the crowning glory for AJ. It all went sideways for both of them. And now, potentially, when they need each other the most, they're forced to the table and they'll be forced to come to a compromise on the money.
This is just mad. It's what boxing needs. It's what AJ needs as well, no doubts about it. I mean, the thing is, Eddie Hearn, we know he plays games. Whatever you say, he is, you know, the elite promoter. Let's not, you know, get it twisted. Even today, we saw it today, he was saying that, actually, we definitely want Joshua AJ out in July, August, but we might not be able to get Wilder, so we'll move that to sort of Christmas time potentially and look at doing this big Saudi deal that everyone's talking about. So what we'll do, and I love the way he says this, because it's all like, do you actually know it's the smokescreen fight fans? So what we'll probably look at doing is get a big fight on like Dillian White, you know, in sort of the July, August time, and then we could do Wilder in December, like, sells it great. Snake oil salesman, you cannot dispute it one little bit. However, smell the coffee, people. Why is he doing that? Because AJ looks so gun-shy against Franklin, it is unreal. Smart money, the smart promoter says, hold on, mate, let's get you another placeholder. And Dillian White is a perfect placeholder. You know, Fury destroyed him, annihilated him. He's kind of it's not a busted flush, that is unfair to say, because I like Dillian White, and he's a game fighter, there's no two ways about it. But it's a great placeholder for AJ, because he should win it.
He should, but it's a risky fight. It's a risky fight to take, because you know
he's massive.
But you know with Dillian as well, that guy holds grudges, and he's never liked AJ. And nothing would make him happier than to go in and put AJ flat on his backside. And even if he could just knock him down, not knock him out, but knock him down, that hurts AJ massively.
Yeah.
Even an unconvincing win hurts him massively. Now, this fight could go ahead, but then there is some other talk. So the other talk is that Alexander Usyk is to fight Daniel Dubois. But now Daniel Dubois has split with his trainer.
Yeah.
And he is now potentially going to be looking for some time away. Him and Shane McGuigan have had the split. And reports are that if the Dubois fight doesn't happen, they're going to order Usyk versus Wilder as the mandatory for Usyk. Now, that's maybe the harshest mandatory anybody's ever been given. But again, it's also a fight people want to see. And for Usyk, he's probably like, well, I can make, you know, 10 million fighting Dubois, or I can make 30 million fighting Wilder. So I'd rather fight Wilder, because I think I'll box his ears off. Now, Wilder obviously comes with that risk of those explosive hands. But if you're Usyk, what do you want to happen? And I think as a fight fan, you'd actually rather see AJ Wilder just to get it done and out of the way, because Usyk Wilder will still be there afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating. And even like as you say that, the Usyk versus Wilder, it's like someone went, Alexa, show me the difference between a boxer and a puncher. They're the ultimate definitions of both. That would be fascinating to watch. Even like, Wilder is just a boxing freak. He's a terrible boxer. Let's be clear on that. He's not a good boxer by any means. He's also, at the same time, the most devastating puncher, probably in heavyweight history. Let's not mince that at all as well. You know, his punch power may be the greatest. It's difficult to argue against that. AJ, I just think, like, Dillian White is a great fight for him in a way. Because if you cannot beat Dillian White, AJ, what are you doing? What are you doing? You cannot beat Dillian White. Wilder is going to annihilate you. I still think he would anyway, don't get me wrong. But the only thing, and I keep looking at these connotations, Dave, they are absolutely brilliant. But Christ, the heavyweights, I mean, time's running out even for the July, August. Because you know the way heavyweights work. Two or three times a year, maximum. End of story. So you've got to get one done sort of July, early August at the absolute latest to get a December. You know, even if it is sounding everything in the calendar as everyone's talking about. Now, everyone said they've got time. No, we have not. We are moving into late May.
Time is
ticking on training camps. These have to happen fast. Because I guarantee you, what happens is, we could talk about it, we could hype it, and then in 2 weeks, promoters could come out, like, you've even seen Fury doing it today, haven't you, calling everyone a, you know, bomb doctor, the full Tyson Fury bingo as it is. He's probably not going to find that, simple as that, until maybe December. That is tragic. If they don't make these deals soon, and there's so many deals, connotations, brilliant fights to be made, it's pathetic. Quite frankly, there's so many connotations. Even like you say, you might end up as it's almost a compromise, but it's no Ruby prize to watch Usyk versus Wilder. Christ, watch it. Let's not pretend by any means. But the heavyweight division has finally got some traction. They've got to get it done either way, and they've got to get it done quickly, because it'll disappear and we just won't care again.
Yeah, it's also probably the last chance to get AJ versus Wilder, because if AJ fights Dillian White and it's a dud of a fight and it's a performance like his last one, people will be very much out on him. If Wilder gets the ears boxed off him by Usyk, people will be out on him. And at that point, it's just sort of a desperation throw of the dice for both. Like, it's a very blatant money grab for both of them to fight. Now, they'll still make money. They just won't make as much because they won't be viewed in the same way. Like, as things stand, people still think Wilder is a top three heavyweight in the world. Maybe a top two heavyweight in the world, because the only guy to beat him is Fury. So he's still got that in his back pocket. But if Usyk comfortably outboxes him, and I think he would, then it becomes a lot more difficult for Wilder to really promote himself as, you know, this all-conquering hero. And the same thing for AJ. I mean, the two fights against Usyk, the bizarre post-fight ramble in the ring, the poor performance last time out. If he has another poor performance against Dillian White, then I think people will just check out and say, look, go and retire. You've got enough money. You've got your business interests. Go and do something else. This is clearly not for you anymore.
Yeah.
So I think if those two want to have that fight and maximize the earning potential, it needs to be next for both. Usyk, Dubois was always an underwhelming fight for him, but it's clear what Usyk wants. Usyk wants Fury. Everybody wants Usyk Fury. The only person that doesn't seem to want that fight is Fury. And you'd have to question why that is, because everything is in his advantage. He's much bigger. He's much stronger. He's not as technical, but he's certainly not as overmatched technically as the likes of Wilder or AJ. He's got the best footwork I think we've ever seen from a heavyweight. And he's got incredible recovery powers. And Usyk isn't a guy packing massive KO power anyway at heavyweight. So that fight heavily favors Fury. Now, I do think Usyk could beat him, but it would be a big upset. But Fury is the only person stopping that fight from happening now. And as we've said before, Fury's the only person doing damage to Fury's legacy, because people are getting sick of him. And I saw the rant today and I just turned it off and I thought, you know what? Just shut up. Go away. We're all sick of hearing the same crap over and over again. Get some new material, maybe. Come back. Because what he's trying to be is he's trying to be boxing's Conor McGregor. He's trying to be outrageous and he's trying to insult people and, you know, he's trying to trigger responses and stuff. but he doesn't have the, like, the thing with McGregor is, McGregor would say it and then he'd be fighting the next day. McGregor never said no to a fight. He just turned up. A little bit like Charles Oliveira. Dana White said he could have told Conor, look, you're fighting here and here. They're the dates. And the only question Conor would have asked was, how much am I getting paid? Not who am I fighting. He didn't care who he was fighting. How much am I getting paid? That's fine. I'll be there. Fury needs to get a bit of that into him because his record is spotty at taking the big fights. He had a very cautiously constructed build up in his career. Then he fought Klitschko. Then he went away. He came back. And again, it was all very careful, all hand picked opponents, all, you know, lots of tomato cans here and there. There's very few good wins on Tyson Fury's record for a guy that's been around as long as he has and is seen as the best heavyweight of the generation. So he's the one that needs to do this for his legacy because Usyk was undisputed at cruiserweight, came up, and now holds three of the four belts at heavyweight. His record, he's an Olympic fighter.
Yeah.
His record's made. He doesn't need to do anything. His now all he needs is the cash. Fury has the cash, but he needs to stamp down his legacy. Or when people start looking back in 30, 40 years, he's not going to compare favorably. Forget the guys from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. He's not comparing favorably to the Klitschkos.
It's just, it's actually tragic, to be honest, Bill Wayne, because, and I really mean this, take all the nonsense and all the name calling, all the videos he does. Tyson Fury, if he filled this with full potential, would be up there in the greatest discussion for heavyweights. Like, let's not mince it at all. His skills, his size, his power, it's almost unheralded for what we've ever seen in the heavyweight division. If people are thinking that's mental, it's really not. Like, look up Muhammad Ali's size, weight, and reach, and then compare it to Tyson Fury. It's just a different level above. It really is. The biggest problem with Tyson Fury, and I want to be careful because everyone knows about it, his mental health and his demons. There's no one, and I mean no one, who can seem to rein him in, control him in any way. Everyone around him, maybe because of his size, power, whatever, seems to dance to his tune. There's no one who can sort of bring him into reality at times. So like you say, you see his rants today. I mean, at one point you're saying, oh, Frank Warren, get me a fight in July and August. Nonsense. Then we say he's like, later on, he's running at Joe Rogan around this UFC stuff against, John Jones. I want a 10-fight deal because I'm planning to retire. Do you mean a 10-fight deal, Tyson? You're not even fighting. You fight like once a year at the moment. It's, ridiculous. Then he said they did want to fight him. I saw in one of his rants. I mean, someone just needed to take his phone off him today, Dave. And then one of my favourites when he went, Andy Ruiz, all the names under the sun, wanted $20 million to fight me. No shit. You know what I mean? Why wouldn't anyone want $20 million to fight you? You're a huge name, Tyson. That's going to be
great. You're making 40. Yes. So aren't they entitled to 20? Like, they're part of, it's not just you in there. And like, that 10 fight thing, if we want to find the last 10 fights of Tyson Fury as a boxer, we've got to go all the way back to 2015.
Joke.
Because he took 3 years off. Now again, he had his issues, but he took 3 years off. He fought three times in 2018, and we thought, great. Great, he's going to be active. He's going to fight every 4 months. That's what he said he was going to do. But then, two in 2019, one in 2020, one in 2021, and those fights were 18 months apart. And then we got two last year, but Dillian White and Derek Chisora, it's not like he was fighting the cream of the crop. You know, and you look at his record since he came back. Safir Safiri, Francesco Pianata, Tom Schwartz, Otto Walling, Dillian White, Derek Chisora. They're six of his last 10 fights. Three of them are Deontay Wilder, and the other one is Vladimir Klitschko. That's two good opponents. And Dillian White, you'd say a decent opponent. So 2.5 good opponents in that time. Before that, there's nobody on his record. Derek Chisora, that's it. Everybody else is a hand-picked tomato can. Like, his legacy isn't as strong as he would he would like people to believe. He's a tremendously gifted fighter. And like you said, if he had lived up to his potential, we would be talking about him as one of the greats, because he would have all of the belts and he would have had them for years, and he'd have whooped everybody. He'd have beaten AJ a couple of times. He'd have beaten Wilder a few times. He'd have beaten Ruiz. But there's the thing. The best heavyweights of his era are Wilder. Okay, he's fought him three times. AJ still hasn't fought him. Not like they haven't been around long enough. And Andy Ruiz hasn't fought him. And now Usyk hasn't fought him. He hadn't even fought Daniel Dubois. Like, you know, you've got to get in the ring and fight these people. These are the fights that are there. These are the big names of your era. If you want to claim you're the best of your era, well, you've got to beat all the best in your era. The reason Ali and Larry Holmes and Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield and Lennox Lewis and Vitaly Klitschko and Vladimir Klitschko, the reason they were the best of eras is because they beat all the best guys in their eras. If they didn't beat them, they at least fought them. They at least fought them. Look at the guys that Evander Holyfield went in with. Monsters. Savages. Some beat him. He beat some of them, but he fought everybody. If this guy doesn't want to, I'm convinced he doesn't want to fight. I've always been of that opinion, that he doesn't really want to fight. He doesn't really know what else to do with himself.
It's just the most bizarre thing I think I've ever seen in boxing, because when he does get in the ring, and like you said, you name the people that he's fought, he destroyed Wilder twice out of three. The only reason Wilder got a draw in the first time is because of obviously his massive weight loss coming back and all that. That's the only reason that was a draw. Simple as that. And, you know, ultimately, completely befuddled Klitschko. You know, when everyone said, Joshua beat Klitschko. Yeah, Joshua beat Klitschko a good 3.5 years later. Do you know what I mean? Well past his peak. And let's be honest, he only just beat Klitschko. Klitschko had him down. He gassed because he was old. Simple as that. Dillian White, might as well declare that a no contest. He just outboxed him for every single round. Couldn't get close. Embarrassed Dillian White and then stopped him. Like, every test, as in when he actually gets into the ring, Tyson Fury just doesn't pass it. He passes it with flying colours. I do honestly think, and I'm serious on this, he is just a level above every other heavyweight. I agree, Usyk could beat him. I think Usyk is an incredible fighter and goes down as a Hall of Fame fighter, all that. Tyson Fury beats him for me. Simple as that.
Tyson Fury should beat him. Absolutely, should beat him. He's got 6 inches of height, about 11 inches of reach. He's got the footwork. He's got a decent defense. He can lean back out of the way of shots. He can take a punch. But Usyk is the only one that I would give even a chance of beating him.
Indeed.
But like, that makes it worse that he hasn't fought these guys. To me. Like, if there were 50-50 fights and you were saying, okay, well, he's protecting his record and whatever. But these aren't 50-50 fights. Fury AJ is 75-25 at best. Fury Ruiz is an 80-20 fight. These are fights he should take and he should win comfortably. He's not taking them. He's walking away from them, or he's making stupid claims and coming out and slagging people off. It's just, it's boring to me now at this point. But you are right. I mean, the Klitschko he beat and he whooped him. AJ fought. That was November 2015. AJ fought him April 2017. So about 18 months later. He was older. He was slower. He hadn't fought in the interim. And the Klitschko fight took a lot of the confidence out of him. But Klitschko going into the Fury fight had not lost in 11 and a half years. 11 and a half years. He'd beaten 22 straight opponents. And
do you
Fury
know what?
Battered him.
Do you know what, David? Maybe this is the only final thing I could say, and maybe this just shows how bad boxing is in a way. What might save the heavyweight division, and I appreciate the irony, and you'll know what I mean when I say that, is Saudi Arabian cash. might save the heavyweight division, and the fact that they're prepared to offer all this. I mean, we know all these topics of sports washing, which I'm not going to delve into and all that, but just the irony that Saudi Arabian cash, a big rook, all the things Eddie Hearn's trying to do could save boxing. But if anyone needs saving for boxing, Christ, Tyson Fury, someone just get a grip of him, please.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a good place to end today. So, like we said, these are must-watch fights at the weekend, so make sure you find yourself in front of a television to watch Katie Taylor against Chantel Cameron, Vasyl Lomachenko against Devin Haney. They should both be absolutely out of this world. And we will be back in a couple of weeks to talk about them and to talk about what else is coming up. So, Dave, anything you want to say before we go?
Nah, if you don't watch this weekend, you're insane. An absolute must.
I would echo that. Take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.
Sports Social Podcast Network.